This is your host, Nashad Carrington. Now, I really hope everyone had a blessed and Merry Christmas, Kwanzaa, Ramadan, or any and every other holiday that you might celebrate during the winter months. Just as well, I hope the new year greeted you and yours with great promise and great hope, and that your new year's was spent just as good as mine was. Now, before we jump into this story, there is a song clip that I want to play for you as a virtual intro to this week's episode. So take a listen to this, and we'll be right back.
There's a yellow rose in Texas I'm going there to see. No other fella knows her, nobody else but me. She cried so when I left her, it like to broke her heart. And if we ever meet again, we never more shall part. She's the sweetest rose of color this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your dearest maids and sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of Tennessee. Where the Rio Grande is flowing, the stars are shining bright. We walked along the river on a quiet summer night. She said, if you remember, we parted long ago. I promised to come back again and not to leave her so. I'm going back to find her, my heart is full of woe. We'll sing the songs together we sang so long ago. I'll pick the banjo gaily and sing the songs of yore. And the yellow rose of Texas, she'll be mine forevermore.
She's the sweetest rose of color this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew.
You may talk about your dearest maids and sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas is the only rose for me.
Now, you're probably seriously wondering, why, if this is the Black History Podcast, why are we playing Texas-style country or folk music about some random yellow rose in Texas? Well, as surprising as it might be, the song is in fact about a black female heroine of the battle for the Alamo. Last week, we did an episode about the first black president in North America, Vicente Guerrero. Well, we're going to stick with that section of the country here and that time frame as well. A couple of the characters from the Vicente Guerrero story will make their way into this week as well. So hopefully you'll remember what their roles were in Mexico and its struggle for independence from Spain, which actually carried over to the Texas Revolution. However, before we dig deep into the story of Emily Morgan, it would serve us well to give a brief updated history of the Texas Revolution. And I promise you, I'll make this background as short as possible because I'm sure you'll want to get to the relevant parts of the diaspora. But before we get there, let's hear a word from one of our sponsors and then we'll be right back. So this episode of the Black History Podcast is brought to you by Make Music Count. The mission of Make Music Count is to increase elementary and secondary students' mathematical skill development through piano playing and reducing their math anxiety. By incorporating music into each lesson, students become engaged through music while simultaneously learning mathematical concepts. Each lesson is based on learning musical notes in a song. Each note is derived through a mathematical equation that varies from addition and subtraction to algebraic equations. Therefore, solving math equations leads directly to the students playing the piano and developing a much more positive attitude towards math. If you're in curriculum development, youth development, any of those sort of things, make sure you check out our friends at Make Music Count. They're doing great things in this country and for our youths, and especially for communities of color. Check them out, makemusiccount.com. Now back to the story. All right, so we're going to knock this history lesson out really quick, and then we'll get back to the piece of diaspora that we're going to talk about for the day. So the Texas Revolution began on October 2nd, 1835, when colonists, primarily from the United States, who lived in the then Mexican province of Texas, rebelled against the increasingly centralist Mexican government. there had been actually about 10 years worth of small skirmishes, political and cultural clashes that had been had between the Mexican government and the growing population of white American settlers in Texas. Now, the turning point for the rebellion's outbreak actually came when Texans, who obviously were English-speaking settlers, disagreed with regards to whether the ultimate goal was to seek independence from Mexico or to return to rule under the Mexican Constitution of 1824. Well, I'm sure you can imagine which way that tide turned when the Texans and floods of volunteers from other parts of the United States defeated small battalions of Mexican soldiers by about mid-December. Now, in 1836, a political convention was held where independence was declared and new leadership was appointed for the Republic of Texas. However, in a determined effort to avenge the honor of Mexico, then president and the former general, who I'm sure you'll recall from the Guerrero episode, Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna, vowed to personally retake Texas. His army had actually entered Texas in February of 1836 and caught the Texans completely unprepared. A Mexican general named Jose de Urrea led troops up the Texas coast, not just defeating, but near massacring all the Texan troops he found in his path, to the point of even executing most of those who were surrendering. Now, I understand that sounds a little bit harsh, but because of what Santa Anna perceived to have been American interference in Mexican affairs, he personally spearheaded a resolution that classified foreigners found fighting in Texas as pirates. Now, this essentially meant that no prisoners of war would be taken. Captured pirates would be executed immediately. Santa Anna, in his own right, led troops the other direction, towards present-day San Antonio, and left in his wake the famed Battle of the Alamo, where he absolutely destroyed the troops maintaining the fort. So, the fort at the Alamo wasn't originally a fort, all right? The Texan soldiers established the fort at the Alamo Mission, which was actually a former Spanish religious outpost converted to a makeshift fort. Santa Anna would describe it as, quote, an irregular fortification hardly worthy of the name, end quote. But what likely did the Texan soldiers in more than anything was the fact that the Alamo was designed to withstand an attack by native tribes, not a heavily equipped and artillery-strapped army. The Alamo complex was spread across 3 acres, providing an area to be defended of almost 1,320 feet. The walls surrounding the complex were just under 3 feet thick and ranged from 9 to 12 feet in height. Needless to say, it wouldn't be tough for a well-trained, battle-hardened military to take over the fort. Now, I won't go much deeper into the battle and the complete history of the Alamo. It really is an interesting read that I'm sure you can probably Google to find out all the details. Let's just suffice to say here that that provides a bit of the backdrop for the diasporic history that we're going to explore today. So here's our first question. Who was Emily Morgan? Foremost, there isn't actually a lot known about the early life of Emily Morgan. So little that we don't even know the day, month, or year that she was born, nor where exactly she was born at. But this individual reportedly, according to the source that you listen to, played an exceedingly vital role in the Texas Revolution. Also, depending on what source you look at, in some places you'll see her name referred to as Emily D. West, and in other places you'll see her referred to as Emily Morgan. Just suffice to say that they are the same people, Emily West and Emily Morgan. Even further, it's presumed that Emily Morgan was a teenaged, orphaned, free black woman in New Haven, Connecticut. Now, there are 3 historical documents that support the existence of her in connection with the time period immediately surrounding the independence of Texas. One of which is a contract that reads, "This agreement made and entered into by and between Emily West of New Haven, Connecticut, of the one part, and James Morgan of Texas, of the other part, witnesseth that said West hereby binds herself that she will go out in said Morgan's vessel to Texas and there work for said Morgan at any kind of housework she, said West is qualified to do and to industriously pursue the same from the time she commences until the end of 12 months and not to quit or leave said Morgan's employee after she commences work for him at any time whatever without said Morgan's consent until the end of 12 months aforesaid, said Morgan hereby binding himself to said West out to Texas on board said Morgan's vessel free of expense and to set said West to work within 1 week after she gets there, if not sooner, said Morgan agreeing to pay said West at the rate of $100 per year, said wages to be paid every 3 months if required. I'll break all of that legalese down for you. Basically, an employment contract between a woman named Emily West of New Haven, Connecticut, and a man named James Morgan of Texas. She was to do some housework, essentially paid every 3 months at a rate of $100 for the year. Now, according to folklore, history, or whatever you may attribute it to, James Morgan was an entrepreneur who was immigrating to Texas to open a hotel in the newly established community of New Washington. Now, James Morgan's friend, who you may have heard of, and also a leader of the Texan Rebellion named Sam Houston, commissioned James Morgan into the Texas Army and sent him to command a troop near Galveston in March of 1836. This part here gets a little bit confusing. But during this time, Emily Morgan reportedly remained behind in New Washington to supposedly administer operations in the shipping port of New Washington, which was a shipping point for supplies earmarked to support Sam Houston's rebel army. Next, the commanding colonel of the Mexican cavalry, Juan Almonte, arrived at New Washington to capture the then president of the Republic of Texas, David Burnett. Burnett was supposed to be leaving from New Washington that same day to head for Galveston Island. Now, when Almonte arrived, he barely missed the opportunity to grab Burnett. Almonte and his troops instead detained Emily Morgan and others who were at one of James Morgan's warehouses. Again, according to folklore or actual history, depending on which you believe, Emily ended up catching the eye of the Mexican general Santa Anna, and against her will, was forced to his tent and kept there for his amusement and entertainment. Now, I don't think I have to speculate to you as to what Santa Anna intended for, quote, amusement and entertainment with a beautiful captive young woman. Anyway, the legend goes, Santa Anna was so enthralled with Emily's beauty that he was literally caught with his pants down when Sam Houston and troops rode into the fields of San Jacinto and decimated the Mexican army in one fell swoop, also capturing Santa Anna while he tried to escape. But the story of the legendary Emily Morgan doesn't end there. The legend goes that Emily Morgan may have intentionally stayed behind in New Washington and then became a prisoner of Santa Anna, all in an effort to distract him and potentially act as a spy to learn his plans and potential troop movements. Whatever the case, Santa Anna was forced to attempt his escape in only a linen short shirt and silk drawers, which I think leads quite a bit more credence to the story that he was in the throes of passion at the time the Texan attack began. Though history can't confirm the theory, there is actually a great deal of support for that myth. The only written account of this was captured by a visiting Englishman named William Bolaert, who captured the following in a diary entry from 1842 after being told the story by Sam Houston. Quote, "The Battle of San Jacinto was probably lost to the Mexicans, owing to the influence of a mulatto girl, Emily, belonging to Colonel Morgan, who was closeted in the tent with General Santa Anna at the time the cry was made, 'The enemy! They come! They come!' and detained Santa Anna so long that order could not be restored readily again," end quote. Interestingly enough, when Bolaert returned to England, he never wrote about the story, and there's no corroborating record of the story either, not from Sam Houston or from anyone else. Now, I have to pause right here because I know what you must be thinking now. This story is purely based on myth, on legend, and speculation. Well, hang on to that thought right there. We mentioned the contract that was entered between Emily and James Morgan. Well, in case you believe that there's no substantiated proof, the original contract is actually kept in the University of Texas Arlington Special Collections. The witnessing party to the contract was famed abolitionist Simeon Jocelyn, who was also a preacher at an African-American church in New Haven, Connecticut. The Texas State Library actually has documentation to even further reinforce the story and the myth. In 1837, Emily D. West applied to the Secretary of State for the Republic of Texas for a passport to return home, stating in fact that she had lost her free papers at San Jacinto in April of 1836. The document that the Texas State Library holds further states that Emily, applying for the passport, came to Texas from New York in 1835 with James Morgan, and further confirms that she was in fact a woman of color, but not a slave. It would appear in connection with the passport request that Emily was able to return to New York in March of 1837. Now, we don't know anything else about her after this point in March of 1837. She literally falls off the face of the earth. We have no idea where she is. History doesn't tell anything else about her. Now, I want you to also remember, I think a huge part of that has to do with the fact that the only real recorded history is those three things. One is the contract between Emily West and James Morgan for her to work in Texas. The second is William Bolliart's diary entry in 1842. And the third is this document that's held with the Texas State Library asking for a passport to return to New York. Those are the only three documents that evidence her in the course of history. So what's the connection then to the song, The Yellow Rose of Texas? Many people have heard the song, and if you aren't sure what song we're talking about, you clearly didn't listen to the beginning of the episode because it was played at the very beginning. I'll play it again at the end just so you get to walk away with it too, but that's the song we're referring to. It's called The Yellow Rose of Texas. Here's where it gets interesting. While I'm sure you assume that the song played at the beginning was sung by a white male, to that you'd be right. In fact, it was folk singer named Gene Autry. But I'm sure few that have heard this song have reflected for long on the implications of the fact that the song is not just about a woman, but about a black woman. Obviously, we're discussing Emily Morgan. But what about the fact that it's a song a black man probably wrote? The lyrics of the original song said the following. I will not sing it, I promise. There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am going to see. No other darkie knows her, no darkie, only me. She cried so when I left her, it like to broke my heart. And if I ever found her, we never more will part. She's the sweetest rose of color this darkie ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your dearest May and sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of Tennessee. When the Rio Grande is flowing, the starry skies are bright. She walks along the river in the quiet summer night. She thinks if I remember when we parted long ago, I promise to come back again and not to leave her so. Oh, now I'm going to find her, for my heart is full of woe, and we'll sing the songs together that we sung so long ago. We'll play the banjo gaily, and we'll sing the songs of yore, and the yellow rose of Texas shall be mine forevermore. More than 25 years later, the lyrics were changed. Soldier was used to replace darkie, and the first line of the chorus was changed to read, she's the sweetest little flower, rather than she's the sweetest rose of color. In 1864, a fourth stanza was added to the song, and it was added to say, And now I'm going southward, for my heart is full of woe. I'm going back to Georgia to see my Uncle Joe. You may talk about your Beauregard and sing of Bobby Lee, but the gallant Hood of Texas played hell in Tennessee. But by 1955, there was a different version of the song by a man named Mitch Miller, where the lyrics were almost completely transformed. Now, this version read, "There's a yellow rose in Texas that I'm going to see. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me. She cried so when I left her, it like to broke my heart. And if I ever find her, we never more will part. She's the sweetest little rosebud that Texas ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your Clementine and sing of Rosa Lee, but the yellow rose of Texas is the only girl for me. When the Rio Grande is flowing, the starry skies are bright. She walks along the river in the quiet summer night. I know that she remembers when we parted long ago. I promise to return again and not to leave her so. Oh, now I'm going to find her, for my heart is full of woe, and we'll sing the songs together that we sung so long ago. We'll play the banjo gaily, and we'll sing the songs of yore, and the yellow rose of Texas shall be mine forevermore." Now, I can only hope that I didn't confuse you too much with the derivations and deviations of the lyrics of the song, but there's a reason I chose to play the Gene Autry version at the very beginning of the song. He refers in his lyrics to a colored rose, and as Emily Morgan was described as being lighter skinned, I'm sure you can see the connection between yellow rose and a light-skinned black woman. Anyway, even if you doubt the tale of Emily Morgan being essential to the winning of the battle for San Jacinto for the Texan troops, I want you to think on this. Every source cites that James Morgan served in the Texan militia. Emily was captured on the property of James Morgan. After capture, Santa Anna took a keen liking to Emily and kept her near his bedchambers. And finally, Emily engaged Santa Anna in sex before the attack by the Texans. But the story of her being a secret spy and purposefully being captured plays out and is really explained in this one small detail of the whole matter. During the Battle of San Jacinto, when Santa Anna was running away in his undergarments and while his troops were being slaughtered, Emily Morgan quietly and conveniently is able to escape the carnage. Now, that doesn't guarantee the fact that she's a spy or that, you know, there was collusion with her and the generals of the Texan militia. But I think it does kind of play well into the fact that maybe she was working for the other side. Obviously, she was American, I guess, not Mexican, and she was being captured and held. But if she was working as a spy and, you know, purposefully stayed behind, maybe that's the reason that she was able to escape pretty quietly in the middle of people being slaughtered left and right. Either way, the immortalization of a black woman in song, especially one sung on the battle lines and otherwise racially divided segments of white Texans, comprises an unprecedented circumstance, matched only by a second fascination that's a quieter kept secret, but plays to the importance and the impact of the diaspora. That's a love story between black people that was powerful enough to be immortalized in song. The woman and the song serve Texas history well, but they serve African American history, folklore, and culture even better. A search through African American folklore reveals that few black women have been painted as desirable and sexually healthy persons. One little known strand of the lore has vestiges of viewing black women in the way that Emily Morgan came to be viewed in The Yellow Rose of Texas. I refer to 19th century courtship rituals during slavery and Reconstruction. These rituals suggested that black women to whom they were addressed were viewed as, quote, special females indeed. But I like to read The Yellow Rose of Texas as presaging this strand of African American folklore. I like to think that the composer of the song so revered the woman, he compared her to a rose, that his choice of expressing her beauty through nature elevated her to a position that has few comparative patterns. Now, we cannot say the song about Emily's value is like, because there's no immediately comparable like. But what we can say is that the separation, the pain that this composer felt, led him to create a song about a beautiful woman, one who became the center of his existence, as well as the center of his creativity, in fact, basically being his muse. The fact that she was, quote, yellow or mulatto was less important to him than the human longings that are the essence of love. Now, this sappiness doesn't go without its own set of disgust at the history as well. And I don't want us to go about or end this lesson without addressing it as well. Emily Morgan's physical body, subject to exploitation as readily as those black persons who were legally enslaved, serves in this legendary capacity to elide the brutality to which black female bodies were potentially victim. Now, there's a clash between the ideal, that being the overly romanticized Texas history, and the real, that being a black woman being raped during the process of history-making events. By elevating Emily Morgan's role in the capture of Santa Ana, by making her a seemingly voluntary participant in the sequence of events, commentators and appreciators of the tale in the song could effectively deny slavery, or certainly deny black women's exploitation during the slavery. Since technically, as we've mentioned a few times, Emily Morgan was not an enslaved person. More specifically, they deny the brutal fact of rape, which Emily Morgan no doubt experienced not only from Santa Ana, but from a Texas soldier as well. Territorial and national unity implied in the events behind the song does not allow for the fact that black people were treated as badly in this instance by the Texans as they were by the Mexicans. The song becomes a pretty sight, a bloody body on which troubling issues about war, slavery, and sexual exploitation can be overlooked in the praise for a beautiful woman who evoked images of a yellow rose. Now, I want to go back one more time and quote the original song lyrics just so that you can kind of appreciate the impact that the song had on the diaspora and black love and just kind of that capturing of feeling that the composer must have felt. And then we'll close it out. There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am going to see. No other darkie knows her, no darkie, only me. She cried so when I left her. It like to broke my heart. And if I ever find her, we never more will part. She's the sweetest rose of color this darkie ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds. They sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your dearest May and sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of Tennessee. When the Rio Grande is flowing, the starry skies are bright. She walks along the river in the quiet summer night. She thinks if I remember when we parted long ago, I promised to come back again and not to leave her so. Oh, now I'm going to find her, for my heart is full of woe, and we'll sing the songs together that we sung so long ago. We'll play the banjo gaily, and we'll sing the songs of yore, and the yellow rose of Texas shall be mine forevermore. This is where we close it out. I hope you all appreciated this episode. Check us out every week. Subscribe in iTunes. Check out our website, www.blackhistorypodcast.com or www.thisiscarrington.com/podcast to see an archive of all of our episodes. As well, we'll have some links that'll help you out in this episode and others. But again, as always, I say, share our episodes with friends, family, you know, everyone who you know. Our history is important. You know, this little piece of Texas history, especially regarding the Texas Rebellion, is kind of quiet. But the funny part about it is not sad. The funny part is that the legend lives on in song. You know, it really, truly lives on in song. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't throw in this little disclaimer, since especially we're using copyrighted material in this song. This podcast may contain copyrighted material, the use of which has not always been specifically authorized by the copyright user. We are making such material available in an effort to advance understanding of environmental, political, human rights, and economic democracy, scientific, and social justice issues. We believe this constitutes a fair use of any copyrighted material as provided for in Section 107 of the U.S. Copyright Law. In accordance with Title 117, U.S. Section 107, the material on this podcast is attributed without profit to those who have expressed a prior interest in receiving the included information for research and educational purposes. I know I ran through that, probably stumbled over a couple of words. Point being is that we use the copyrights only for educational purposes. So I'm going to close you all out with Gene Autry again, and then we'll roll out of here. You all take care. Have a good one. And as I like to say here, only steel can sharpen steel. We'll see you next week.
There's a yellow rose in Texas I'm going there to see. No other fella knows her, nobody else but me. She cried so when I left her, it like to broke her heart. And if we ever meet again, we never more shall part. She's the sweetest rose of color this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your dearest maids and sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of Tennessee. Where the Rio Grande is flowing, the stars are shining bright. We walked along the river on a quiet summer night. She said, if you remember, we parted long ago. I promised to come back again and not to leave her so. I'm going back to find her, my heart is full of woe. We'll sing the songs together we sang so long ago. I'll pick the banjo gaily and sing the songs of yore. And the yellow rose of Texas, she'll be mine forevermore.
She's the sweetest rose of color this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew.
You may talk about your dearest maids and sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas is the only rose for me.